Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. The Visitors are still out there as V ticks down to the start of its second season on ABC Tuesday night. Find out what awaits when executive producer Steve Perlman joins me next. Some channels around the nation could go dark at midnight when we turn from 2010 to 2011. We'll detail where and what's involved. And before this hour is complete, final thoughts on this year, next year, and the TV people departing in between. Happy New Year's Eve, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, live from New York on Blog Talk Radio. One more time for 2010. This just in. Tomorrow will be televised. Thanks for making us part of your New Year's Eve day, the final day of this incredible year, 2010, first year of a new decade. Happy to have you aboard. And as always, we invite you to be part of the program with a phone call. If you have a question or comment for our guest ahead, just dial in at 1-646-652-2906. That's 1-646-652-2906. That number is good anywhere you are catching us live on Blog Talk Radio, or get into our chat room. It's open and available for you right now. Sooner you get into the room, sooner we get what you have to say on the air. Steve Perlman from V joins us live from Los Angeles shortly, but first, a news note. Some 50 million satellite and cable customers may find dark channels rising after midnight tonight. Unless carrot disputes are resolved when 2010 turns 2011, DirecTV's 24 million customers will lose Raycom media-owned stations in 40 markets, plus the Golf Channel. E-Entertainment Television and Style could go black among Dish Network's 14 million users. 4 million Time Warner cable customers may find no broadcast stations owned by Sinclair or Cunningham in central New York, Ohio, San Antonio, Texas, Milwaukee, and elsewhere, thanks to separate contract issues. DirecTV, Dish, and Time Warner officials promise negotiations to avoid these channel drops will go down to the wire tonight. And whatever transpires, blackout or not, we'll have the details for you Monday at our regular time period, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, here on Blog Talk Radio. V was one of the most popular miniseries happening on broadcast television in the 1980s. It was created in 1983, sequel 1984, and a one-season TV series version in 84-85. Now it is back in a new version, going into its second season Tuesday night at 9 p.m. on ABC. And joining us live from Los Angeles, the executive producer, Steve Perlman. Steve, happy New Year's Eve, and welcome in.
Thanks a lot.
So when we see V return for season two next Tuesday night, what can we expect?
There's a lot more going on this season. We're going to see some more lizard skin than we saw last year. We're going to see other parts of the lizard. And generally, we're just kind of amping up everything to give the viewers more of what they responded to last year.
What have you learned about doing a science fiction series from V? Because you had a lot to go on, and also you had a lot to live up to, because it was one of the most remembered, not only of all science fiction miniseries in the 1980s, but pretty much during the 80s in terms of any miniseries.
The thing about any science fiction show, I think, is that there are rules that you have to adhere to. Also, when you're looking back at something like V that was remembered very fond or is remembered very fondly from the 80s, you have to honor the original, and yet you have to build on it and give the audience not just what they're wanting from the original, but adding to it, in a sense, paying homage to the original as opposed to just repeating things that they did. So there are some iconic scenes from the original. Everybody remembers Diana eating the rat. That's something that we're going to have fun with this year, but we're not going to do it in the same way that was done in the original show.
Kerr Johnson, who created V, had said somewhere, and I read it this morning, that he originally intended this to be allegorical, to be sort of a look at what could have been a fascist society in this country or somewhere else in the world. Have you really touched on the allegorical aspect of V so far? And if not, will you do that in season two?
Well, I think there's some definite parallels to what we're doing in the show to what's going on in the real world. I don't think that's necessarily the driving force. I mean, we're trying to tell good stories with interesting characters and fun surprises. But I do think that the idea of an alien coming down and living among us is, you know, as the pilot suggested a year and a half ago, a strong allegory, if you want to go that far, to 9/11, to a lot of the things that we're experiencing in our society today. I mean, you know, the economy, if you want to say that the problems that we're having with the economy are akin to an alien, to something that we don't know how to deal with. It's an evil force. I mean, that may be going a stretch too far, but I do think that the comparisons to what happened on 9/11 are there, whether they were intended to be there, you know, by Scott Peters, who wrote the pilot initially, or not.
Steve Perlman, the executive producer of V, kicks in the second season Tuesday night, 9 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time on ABC. He's our guest on this final Tomorrow We Televise of 2010. He's in L.A. I'm in New York. Simon Applebaum here with you. Thanks for joining us here on Blog Talk Radio. And we invite you to be part of the conversation. Two ways to do it. Give us a call at 1-646-652-2906. That's 1-646-652-2906. That number is good anywhere you're listening to us around the world, around the country, here on Blog Talk Radio. Chat room is open, too, so if you don't want to use the phone, use the room. That's why it's around. And coming up on Monday, we got a blockbuster first episode of 2011. We have Howard Owens, the executive producer of the new Paula Abdul competition series, Live to Dance, which also makes its debut on CBS Tuesday night. And on Monday night, Greek kicks into its fourth year on ABC Family. We'll have the creator and executive producer, Sean Smith, for an exclusive same-day interview. Also aboard, Rick Feldman, the president of one of the most important trade associations in the TV industry, NAPI, the National Association of Television Program Executives, whose annual conference will take place later in January in Miami Beach. Steve, what's been most fun for you putting V together?
My job is actually on set a lot of the time. We shoot the show in Vancouver, British Columbia. The writers are in Los Angeles. So at the beginning of every episode, we get a script, and it's largely my responsibility to figure out how to get that script on film so that we can deliver the vision that the writers have and tell the story that they want to tell within the parameters that we have to deal with on set and with the actors and with the locations and with the budgets. And it's really about putting all that together. And to me, that's what my job is, and that's what's the most fun. And I love going to work every day. I love dealing with all the visual effects that we have in the show, because that's really very cutting edge for television. There's not a lot of weekly series that are doing the kind of visual effect and the amount of visual effect work that we're doing, and it's breaking new ground. So it's a lot of fun, and it's the kind of thing that you really couldn't be doing on just about any other series on television.
How are the special effects breaking new ground?
Well, all of the scenes that we shoot on the mothership are on a green screen stage. So there's no real sets. They're all virtual sets. They exist inside of a computer. And we have a particular system that we use with our visual effects company that it allows us to see the sets in real time as we're shooting them, even though what the camera is seeing is just a big green screen. So that's something that other shows aren't using. We're the only series that is using that right now in television. And it allows us to do a lot of things. It allows us to move a lot more quickly, first of all. It allows the actors to see what the sets look like, even though the room that they're in is just a big green screen stage. It allows directors who don't have as much experience shooting in the virtual set world, it gives them a comfort level because they can actually see what they're doing and they can see how the actors are moving around in the room, even though it's all virtual. So that's something that has been very helpful. And without that, I don't think we could be doing the amount of visual effect work that we're doing. There's all kinds of other things that we're doing on top of that, which include animation of creatures, which is something that we hadn't done last year, but we are doing this year. We are doing a lot more of our immolation, which is how the visitors kind of get killed and vaporize. We're doing that in new and different ways this year. So it's been a real learning curve, very steep learning curve, but it's one where you just kind of get thrown into it and you got to figure it out. And there are also sets that we've built this year, virtual sets that we've built, that are not on the mothership, that are things that the scripts called for that we could not find in the real world because of the scope or size of a space, or, for example, one set that we needed to build or find was essentially a nuclear reactor. And that was something that we decided to build virtually because we just couldn't find anything in the real world that if we were going to go shoot on location, we couldn't find anything that would be quite exactly what we needed.
With all that in place, how then does the second season stretch what the actors are doing, how the plots go, the subject matter you can take the series in? I'm just wondering how this whole virtual set process can like forward things along, both in terms of what the actors do and ultimately what the show does.
Well, I would hesitate to say that the virtual set process is driving the stories. I think that I'd look at it more in the reverse, that the virtual sets allow us to tell the stories that the writers want to tell. I think that ultimately, any good show has to start with the story and the plot. And I think that this year, before we ever started production way back in the end of May, the writers had 9 weeks to plot out what stories they wanted to tell this year, how they wanted to arc them over the course of the season. And we stuck pretty religiously to that. I mean, there were some a few little side trips that we took in some episodes and some things that we couldn't get to just because we had so much story. But for the most part, the arcs that the writers laid out at the beginning of the season were the stories that we told. And the ability to comfortably use virtual sets allowed us to tell some of those stories. For example, the nuclear reactor that I mentioned a minute ago was a story about later in the season. We have a story about how Anna is going to bring blue energy to the world as a gift, same way as last year we followed the way the visitors brought their healing to the world. This year they're going to solve our energy crisis. So Anna is bringing blue energy to the world, and so they're building this blue energy reactor, if you will, and so that by using the visual effects and the virtual set technology, we were able to build that in a way that is both real and believable for what we on this planet would believe would be some kind of nuclear reactor, but it also incorporates the V technology.
Are you going to be getting more this year into matters of race or class or politics or just how societies go, as well as we have good aliens as well as evil aliens who want to blow up the world?
We're not really dealing too much with the issue of race in the show. I think that, you know, one of the things that we've seen on the mothership that floats over New York City is that there's a kind of a melting pot of visitors, much like America is a melting pot. We will be on another ship at some point this season, where we'll see that the people on that ship more resemble the people of that nation. But we're not really trying to make any kind of a statement about race. The one thing that I would say is a very big arc for us this season that kind of touches on your question a little bit in terms of kind of class and structure and society and all that is the introduction of the Diana character this year, who shows up at the end of episode one, and it's been widely publicized already that played by Jane Badler of the original series, is a story of mothers and daughters. So we've got three generations of visitor women, Diana obviously playing grandma. She's Anna's mother, and then we have Lisa, who is the heir apparent, the next queen to be. So that is a story that we tell over the course of this season, and it gets us into some interesting places, not only for our show, but I think also just in exploring the relations between mothers and daughters. And it's one of the things that I think we find in our show, and I think you find in real life, is that it can be a very complicated relationship sometimes.
Steve Perlman, the executive producer of V, which begins its second season Tuesday night, 9 p.m. on ABC. He's our guest this half hour on Tomorrow We Televise, our final episode of this 2010, which is now about 11 hours away from completing and turning into 2011. Simon Applebaum here with you live from New York. Steve joining us from Los Angeles, and we invite you to be part of the program. All it takes is dialing 1-646-652-2906. That's 1-646-652-2906. Or getting into our chat room. That's why it's there. So if you don't use the phone, use the room. We give you lots of ways to communicate and participate on this program. Steve, has Kenneth Johnson said anything about the show? Has he given his blessing? Have you talked with him, or are your other producers talked with him about the direction of the show?
To be honest, we have not. I know there was when we first started out, there had been some conversations, I believe, between Mr. Johnson and Scott Peters, who wrote the pilot. Ken has been afforded an appropriate credit on the show, as he was the original creator of V, but he's not involved on a daily basis now.
Well, before you got involved with V, you were an executive for a long time with Warner Brothers Television. What's it like to be on the other side, as opposed to being an executive who can greenlight shows like V? During your time, you had ER, other Warner Brothers shows, Warner Brothers being the major television series producer. What's it like being on the other side, being the person who's involved with the shows intimately as opposed to the person who's greenlighting or seeing things from afar?
The two jobs are, in some respects, are like two different sides of the same coin. Obviously, being online producing a show is just much more hands-on day-to-day with one show. As an executive, when I was at Warner Brothers in the current programming department, I was overseeing production of up to 30 series at some points. I was an executive in the development area, overseeing all development. We would make 30 pilots in a year. And to make 30 pilots, you're probably developing at least 100, 150 scripts sometimes. So it's hard at that stage to really be intimately involved with any project, because you have to just have – you're more managing and overseeing – a lot of different producers and a lot of different writers and guiding and giving input, but not being intimately involved in the way that you are when you're online on a show, and dealing with the very, very small minutiae of what goes into making a TV show, picking every prop that is used, picking every location, making sure when you go on location that the signage that exists in the normal location is covered up so that we don't get sued by somebody, or that the network doesn't have a problem with brands that are being featured. We have to cover all that stuff up. So that's just a very, you know, one example or a couple examples of the kind of detail that I would get involved with on the producing side that when you're an executive, you would never in a million years be involved with.
Does it help you appreciate the process of what your fellow producers go through day to day?
Having been on as an executive,
mm-hmm.
I think that the more experiences one has in a career or in life, the better they would be at all aspects of their job. I mean, I've said many times to colleagues and to friends, if I were to ever go back and be an executive again, I think I would do it in a very different way because I've been a producer, for quite a few years now and seeing what it's like on this side. I think that a lot of times when you sit in an office and you never really get to a set where they're actually filming the show, you might think you have an idea about the way things are done, but until you're actually there, it's very, very difficult to know. So I think that the other thing that, looking at it the other way, as a producer, I deal on a daily basis with studio executives and network executives. And having been an executive myself, I think I have maybe a little bit better understanding sometimes of where they're coming from with their comments or thoughts or ideas or directives than I would had I not been in that job before.
One thing that the creators of V and the people who did V back in the 80s did not have, that you have, is instantaneous reaction. People can react to your show online. They can do it through blogs. They can do it through Facebook. They can do it through Twitter, all the social media stuff. What's the most interesting reaction you're getting about your show from the online fans? And what has surprised you about their feelings?
Well, the outpouring of support for the show has amazed me from the beginning, going back to even before the show was picked up to series. The fans of V were very aware of the pilot, the fact that we were making a pilot, the fact that V was being rebooted for a new generation, and ABC hadn't even decided to pick up the show to series, and there was an outpouring of support on websites, a number of fan sites, not so much in the written press, but certainly on the internet. And I honestly believe that had some impact on the network, on ABC, when they decided to order the series, because I think they were able to see for themselves that there was a built-in audience or loyal following to the show that they could just build on, that they wouldn't need to establish this as a new show for, there was a built-in familiarity already. So I think that was one thing from the very beginning that I think was very interesting for the show. Another thing that I think that we responded to and I think will paid off very nicely for us, and I think the audience will agree, was the introduction of Jane Badler, bringing her back into this new incarnation of the series in not the same character, but a similar character, certainly, and the same name. This is not the same Diana that existed in the original series. This was a character that the writers, Scott Rosenbaum, our showrunner, had talked about introducing, bringing in Anna's mother. It proved to be a very good character for us. One of the questions that had come out of the first season was there were a lot of questions from fans about just the logistics of how long have they been here? Why did the V's come here? What is their game plan? How do they get to where they are? And by introducing the character of Diana, it gave Anna somebody else to talk to where we could get some of that information out in a more natural way. So we were bringing in this character of Anna's mother. We had a lot of fans asking, begging, pleading that Jane Badler should be brought into this series. And we contacted Jane, who was living in Australia, which was her home for 20 years. And she actually auditioned for the role, and she was fantastic. And it became a no-brainer for us that she should be this character. But that was something, again, that I would say that the fans had a lot to do with making that happen and expressing their desire for that to happen.
Were the fans also saying bring back Mark Singer, who many people remember as the hero of V, as well as the Beastmaster on film?
Yeah, I mean, we've had fans for 2 years now basically saying bring back anybody and anyone from the show, but Jane and Mark, I think, were the two, were certainly two of the more prominent because of their prominent roles in the original series. And Mark, you know, was announced recently, will also make an appearance in the show later in the season. You know, I find it's fun to watch online on Facebook. I'm on the West Coast, so when we start airing 3 hours earlier on the East Coast, I'll look at the Facebook site for V and see as people are watching the show what they're responding to. And sometimes the responses are exactly what I would expect them to be, and people are surprised at exactly the right moments and exactly how we had kind of anticipated. And sometimes there will be surprises. Last year in our season finale, there were a number of people who thought that Marcus was not a visitor, was actually a member of the Fifth Column on a reveal that happened at the end of the show. And that was something that was great that the audience kind of intuited that, but that was certainly not anything that we had necessarily planned as the producers of the show.
You talk a lot about the mothership. Any possibility, if we haven't seen it yet, the mother world, you know, where these aliens come from, whether they're operating on their own as a society or whether they've got other, they have alliances with other planets?
That's certainly an opportunity for future. We don't go to the mother planet in this season. One thing, though, that we will do when we introduce the Jane Badler character, Diana, she has been sequestered into an area of the mothership, which is very unlike any other area that we've seen. In fact, it's almost cave-like and kind of dripping with organic material and like moss and plants, which is supposed to be much more like the natural environment on their home planet. So that's as close as we will get in this season.
Steve, one more thing before we let you go to celebrate New Year's Eve and the turn of a new year. What do you hope for? I don't know how much time you have a chance with your show to mingle with other executive producers or people in the Hollywood production community. But from what you gather, what's their sense about what 2011 is going to bring? Do they think we're going to see more 3D with interactive programming? Do they look at things like more television networks like Cartoon Network and others getting into the scripted TV game? What's people's thoughts about what 2011 is going to bring?
I honestly haven't had too many conversations with other producers about it. I think that certainly what we're seeing in the theatrical film releases is a lot of 3D. We're starting to see television sets being manufactured and sold with 3D. I think that that is probably something that we're going to see more of that, but I'm not sure ultimately that that's going to be a driving force behind what makes a good show or what makes a bad show. I think it's still, the bottom line is it still comes down to interesting stories and interesting characters and the ability to be original. I think in today's television environment, you have to have something that's big and promotable because you got to break through the clutter because there's so many choices that the audience has today. 3D is, right now, 3D is kind of a promotable hook. It's something that you can say, whether it's a TV show or a feature, we've got 3D, come check us out. But once all shows are doing it, or even once a lot of shows are doing it, that's not going to break through the clutter so much anymore. It's going to be kind of like a who cares, I think, because the shows themselves aren't 100% in 3D. It's a couple scenes or a couple moments, and if you have to wear glasses along with it, that kind of becomes an annoyance. So I think we'll see some of the 3D. I don't think that it's going to be kind of like the next big, huge thing, the way flat screen TVs are. I think it'll just be kind of an add-on. I think it's still going to come down to interesting stories and interesting characters.
Do you see V doing a 3D episode in season two, or if not season two, down the road?
Well, season two, we've wrapped production on season two, so I can tell you definitively we did not do it in season two. I think if we were to get picked up for a third season and the network came to us and said, we'd love for you to do something in 3D, we absolutely would. And I think it would work very well within our show. There are things even that the audience will see in the first episode involving some lizard parts that we haven't seen before that, if done in 3D, could be really fun. And we see blood splatter, and that could be great in 3D. I mean, there's a lot that we could do that would be very organic and natural for our show. And sure, we'd love the opportunity to do it.
And in the meantime, there's always high definition, and half the country has high def sets. So, and I've seen episodes of V in HD, and it looks pretty darn great.
It's pretty great in HD. Yeah, I will have to admit, it's a big difference if you're watching in HD versus if you're watching in standard def. But I think we try and make the show work for everyone. We try and have characters that are distinctive and some big plot twists. And those are the kinds of things that will play whether you're watching it on an iPhone or if you're watching it on a 65-inch screen.
So whatever definition you have, you can start seeing the second season of V Tuesday night, 9:10 Eastern Pacific Time on ABC. Check your local listings for where ABC is available in your area. And, of course, for more details about the show, abc.com online. Steve Perlman, executive producer at V in Los Angeles. Thanks for joining us on this final day of 2011. To you, the cast, crew, everybody, have a wonderful 2011, and thanks for being with us to mark the turn of the year.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Steve Perlman from V joining us live from Los Angeles. And again, season premiere Tuesday night, 9 p.m. Eastern Pacific on ABC. This is Tomorrow Will Be Televised, our final episode of 2010, and we're with you always at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, except for rare occasions like this, at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific here on Blog Talk Radio. And coming up on our next episode, Monday in our regular time slot, 90-minute blockbuster for you. We will have the executive producer of the new Paula Abdul series, Live to Dance, premiering also Tuesday night on CBS. Howard Owens will join us. Also, ABC Family's popular series Greek begins its fourth season Monday night at 8 p.m. Eastern Pacific. Sean Smith, the creator and executive producer of that show, will join us for a same-day preview. And we will have Rick Feldman, one of the top trade association executives in television, will join us. He is the president of NAPI, the National Association of TV Program Executives, and he'll give us a preview of where he thinks TV will be going in the year ahead, as well as his organization's annual conference taking place late January in Miami Beach. That's all coming your way next Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, here on Blog Talk Radio. Don't forget, you can catch episodes of any of our shows throughout 2010. Two ways to do it. First, on our homepage, www.blogtalkradio.com/SimonApple04. That's www.blogtalkradio.com/SimonApple04. All of our shows on Blog Talk Radio the entire year, all the great guests we've had available for you there, as well as on podcasts. And when you get our podcast, downloadable to any major mobile device, including BlackBerries and Microsoft Zooms and Samsung Galaxy phones, you can get bios and headshots of our guests, scenes from the shows they work on as well. Tomorrow we televise all our episodes from 2010 available on podcasts at iTunes.com, Zoom.net, many other websites available to the fine folks at Sonobite, also as a podcast on TiVo, any model of that digital video recorder, and available to teachers and students nationwide through cable in the classroom at ciconline.org. That's ciconline.org. When we come back, some final thoughts about 2010, what's coming up in 2011, and our annual feature, Tomorrow Will Be Televised for Members. But right now, after the bottom of the hour, we pause for web identification. The best radio on the web is right here at www.blogtalkradio.com. More than 7 million listeners around the world and growing. It's your home for Milling About with Robin Milling. Next Friday, she kicks off her new season, her new year, with a season premiere and a good one. So check out Milling About with Robin Milling, January 7th at 11 a.m. Eastern, 8 a.m. Pacific, only on Blog Talk Radio. Welcome back to the second half of Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Simon Applebaum here with you live from New York. Thanks for joining us on this final day, New Year's Eve day of 2010. Coming up, some final thoughts on what happened this year, what may happen next. And before we do that, we have a bit of a feature to give you. It's called Tomorrow Will Be Televised Remembers. Every year around this time, Turner Classic Movies puts together a featurette about the people who passed on in front of and behind the film camera over the last 12 months. It's done to a wonderful song, original music, great editing, great work. It's on already, and you haven't seen it. It's a terrific 4 or 5 minute featurette that's much worth your while. I really was inspired by this 3 years ago on the show to do a similar feature about all the great TV people who passed away in a given calendar year. So for the third straight year, here we go with Tomorrow Will Be Televised Remembers. I heard someone make the point on CNBC Squawk Box today that so many television icons, so many notable actors passed on this year, starting with Leslie Nielsen. After many years in live television drama in the 50s, episodic drama in the 60s and beyond, he turned his career around big time by being the crazy Lieutenant Frank Drebin, serious but funny, in Police Squad. The show lasted only 6 episodes on ABC in the 80s, but it gave birth to a wonderful character that made it big in films like The Naked Gun. Leslie Nielsen passed on this year. So did James MacArthur, the famous second-in-command of McGarrett on Hawaii Five-O. Book him, Dano. Tony Curtis was not as much a TV star as he was a film star, but for one great year in the late 60s, he paired up with Roger Moore on The Persuaders. Show should have lasted longer on ABC. Would have, with a better time period. We lost what some people think of as the quintessential dad and mom this year, Tom Bosley, Richie Cunningham's father, on Happy Days for so many seasons, and Barbara Billingsley, the irrepressible June Cleaver, on Leave It to Beaver. You might call the wisecracking son of all time passed on, too, Gary Coleman. He had a very troubled life after Different Strokes, but when he was on camera, he was tremendous. John Forsythe, debonair actor, starred in comedy on Bachelor Father, the John Forsythe Show, and To Rome with Love, and then he became the head of the Carrington clan on Dynasty for so many years on ABC. He passed on too. So did Purnell Roberts, Adam, one of the original four sons on the long-running Western Bonanza. Dixie Carter, great Southern Belle on The Edge of Night, and then one of the designing women. And speaking of designing women, somebody had a great design versus Maud's best friend, then one of the Golden Girls, Rue McClellan. Peter Graves, in the late 50s, he was the man of Fury, the horse. And then Mission Impossible, when original star Stephen Hill bowed out because of various situations, Graves came in and did the job as Mr. Phelps on one of the best spy dramas ever made, with that great Lalo Schifrin theme music and wonderful cast, including Barbara Bain and Martin Landau. Davy Crockett, King of the Wild Frontier, Bess Parker. Also, Daniel Boone. Robert Culp, a great buddy for Bill Cosby for 3 years in the mid-60s on one of the groundbreaking TV series of that time, I Spy. Mitch Miller got us all to sing along. A 1960s great record executive with Columbia Records, and he also brought Leslie Uggams and other wonderful talent to television and later did great careers in entertainment on that four-year-old NBC series. And there was Steve Landsberg, the laconic detective on Barney Miller. And there were people in other sides of TV camera who passed away as well. Kids Say the Darndest Things. Austin Glitter got the best out of them on House Party and on People Are Funny. Jimmy Dean, one of the pioneers of country music on television, his popular ABC variety show in the 60s, and later The Sausage Maker, gave us all a great breakfast as a wonderful country music star over the years. And how about Clay Cole? In the 1960s, he was big time on WPIX. He was the Dick Clark of that market. And, among other people, he introduced the Rolling Stones to television. Bud Greenspan, the great Olympic documentarian. Many countless wonderful television hours of seeing the great unsung stories, the athletes who made it and the athletes who didn't during the Winter and Summer Olympics. Turn out the lights, the party's over. Certainly is for Dandy Don Meredith, the original commentator, partnered so well with Howard Cosell on NFL Monday Night Football. Later was a good actor in episodes of series like Police Story. Same fate for Merlin Olsen, the famous football player from the Los Angeles Rams, wonderfully paired with Dick Enberg on NFL games on NBC for so many years, including Super Bowls. And then later, he was Father Murphy on the spinoff of the successful Little House on the Prairie, put together by Michael Landon, another one of the famous sons on Bonanza. And in real life, Daniel Shore, the CBS News correspondent, major player in reporting Watergate, and former and later on correspondent analyst for National Public Radio. James J. Kilpatrick, he was the original point of Point Counterpoint for many years on 60 Minutes. And there were people who you didn't see the face of, but you know the voice. Like Art Gilmore, after so many years doing movie trailers, he was the voice of Highway Patrol and the Red Skelton Hour. Fred Foy, a fiery horse with the speed of light, a hearty hi-ho silver, the Lone Ranger, later the announcer on the Dick Cavett Show. And Charlie O'Donnell, the man that introduced us to Pat Sajak, Vanna White, and those contestants, night after night in syndication on Wheel of Fortune. And, of course, it was always a pleasure to hear him say that a contestant had won $25,000. Charlie O'Donnell was also an announcer for Dick Clark on American Bandstand and other shows, too. Also very popular Los Angeles radio personality. And that's all the folks in front of the camera or behind the microphone of a camera that passed away. How about people involved in production? Blake Edwards created two of the most iconic series of their kind in the 50s, Peter Gunn and Mr. Lucky, and the great partnership with Henry Mancini on music. Arthur Penn, he directed wonderful live television drama in the 50s, turned one of them to a classic movie, The Miracle Worker, won several Oscars for Anne Bancroft and Patty Duke, later an executive producer on Law & Order. Stephen J. Cannell, the man who came out of dyslexia and became one of the best independent producers in the medium. Hunter, The A-Team, Silk Stockings, just some of his credits. Alexander Anderson Jr., you probably don't know the name, but he's famous for creating the first animated television series in the 1950s, Crusader Rabbit, later paired up with Jay Ward and Bill Scott to create Rocky and Bullwinkle. Art Clokey, the man that created Gumby and David Goliath, pioneer in stop-motion animation. Corey Allen, he challenged James Dean to a knife fight, then a chicken run on autos in the classic Rebel Without a Cause. Later became a terrific episodic television director, won an Emmy Award in 1981 for Hill Street Blues. And although he was not better known for television, going back to sports for a moment, Harry Callis. He was the radio and TV voice for years for the Philadelphia Phillies. He lived long enough to see the Phillies win a World Series. And he was also, for many years, the co-host of Pat Summerall on NFL Films' syndicated show, This is the NFL, one of the best voices any sport ever had. And finally, David L. Wooper. When it comes to people producing outstanding television on a consistent basis, innovating at the same time, and producing programs that moved, touched, and inspired generations, nobody did it consistently or as great as David L. Wooper. The list of accomplishments, incredible, would fill more than an hour. He created the independent documentary. He invented biography. He brought to the screen the National Geographic specials and Jacques Cousteau. He brought also two of the finest miniseries ever made, Roots and The Thornbirds. and he brought two of the greatest live television events of the 1980s. The 1984 opening and closing ceremonies to the Summer Olympic Games in Los Angeles, and 4 years later, the centennial here in New York of the Statue of Liberty. When it came to producing television, nobody could live up to David L. Wooper. He was without question in a category all by himself. He believed from the get-go that people wanted to be moved and touched and inspired by television that challenged them, inspired them, and made it better people for them as a result. David O. Wooper is the great example of what television can be when it's a great medium. He and all the folks that we remember now will be profoundly missed. What connects all of them is that they made a contribution, whether it's with their acting, their play-by-play, their newscasting, or just by producing and directing. They all made a contribution to what you and I watch, and we have the medium we have for their contribution. They will all be missed. It's been a wonderful year to follow the world of television. In a few hours, I'll be wrapping up 30 years covering this medium, and I've never had a medium to cover as dynamic as it was this year. What a way to mark 30 years, three decades in the medium. What about Conan and Jay and the great fiasco at NBC? Both have worked out. Jay back at The Tonight Show, Conan on TBS, and both working out well, the solid ratings. There was the deal that got Comcast and NBC Universal on the road to merger. Didn't happen the way it was supposed to at the end of the year. You have to wait a little longer, but it'll be very interesting to see how that merger plays out. More shows produced than ever before on television, and a lot of great shows. Boardwalk Empire and Treme came on HBO. The Big C on Showtime. Spartacus put stars on the map, and Epix, the newest paid cable network with a bunch, turned a profit. There was the salute to the last season of Lost and that ending that people are still talking about even now. And there was more great episodes of Glee and Modern Family and The Good Wife, and some of them won Emmy Awards. There was the fact that the Emmys, we don't know what's going to happen to them. For the first time in a long while, the Emmys does not have a carrier. Could it be the first of the major award shows to go to cable? We'll find out hopefully soon. We have the Vancouver Winter Olympics, and what will happen when Comcast gets a hold of NBC? Will they continue to be the Olympic network, or will it go to ESPN, CBS Turner, Fox, or another party? The negotiations for the Olympics beyond London next year start in a few months. It was the year of more high-def programming and more high-def television. More than half the American public now has a high-def set. More than half the American public has video on demand. And this year, 10 billion views. It was also the DVR going past 40%. It was the year that 3D happened. No, didn't get as many sets as we thought, but 3D is around at ESPN. We'll see it tomorrow during the Fiesta Bowl, live in prime time, and in the Bowl Championship Series, among the more than 100 events that ESPN 3D will carry its first year. DirecTV has its M3D service, and starting by March 31st, Discovery, Sony, and IMAX may be with the biggest 3D venture of them all. Hopefully, not the last. And you don't have to wait till New Year's Day to have a lot of activity in television. For the first time, we will see the major bowl games go from broadcast to cable. We will see the Oprah Winfrey Network own premiere. We will see a shifting of the guard for public television in Los Angeles. KCT goes independent. KOCE becomes PBS SoCal. By the way, a week from today, we will have the head of PBS SoCal, KOCE, Mel Rogers, live on our program. A lot of other things to think about, like American Idol, like So You Think You Can Dance, like Dancing with the Stars, a few you don't want to think about, like Skating with the Stars. But overall, I will think of four things in particular about this year that will impact maybe the rest of this decade and the rest of our lives. First, this may be the year that online video becomes a new laboratory for television. From Adventure Time with Finn and Jake to Bitchin' Kitchen on Cooking Channel, all of them had their roots in online video, and we may be seeing the beginning of that. We may, despite the mixed results of 3D, start to see that medium flower next year. This is the time for interactive television. We end this year with every TV set maker, every cable operator, DirecTV, Dish, Fios, Uverse, all having interactive features. Google TV, after so many years of saying, hey, they're going to get into something interactive, finally happening. So is Apple TV too. And what will happen starting next week at the Consumer Electronics Association's annual show in Las Vegas, where we will see interactive TV and 3D flower. We could see Google give the go-ahead to those Android developers, 100,000-plus strong, saying, go ahead, make our day. turn your mobile phone applications into TV applications, and, oh, yes, create some new imaginative things for the medium. Will we see those 300,000 iPhone and iPad developers do the same on Steve Jobs' call? And what else will we find? Well, Samsung has the free TV challenge. They've announced their winners, who they'll showcase next week in Vegas. Watch out. There's some very exciting things in the bunch. And this is the year, perhaps, that video telephony got off the ground. We weren't talking about it before, but we certainly are now. There's Cisco's UMI. There's Skype, available through different TV sets from Panasonic to Vizio. And there is the Logitech set-top box with Google TV and their video calling option. And we've learned that starting next week, Verizon may be testing their own video calling service, as well as a home monitoring service where you could use your television set to adjust your air conditioning, your lights, your garage door opener, even your appliances. Yes, we could be entering, starting in January, the era of home monitoring on television. Better living through TV, literally. 2011 is going to be a very exciting year. Another thing you can bet on, there will be more original programming than ever, and more networks getting into the game, and more networks, period. And after this recession that's lasted quite a while, it looks like a lot of people want to get into the medium. Well, Tyler Perry finally launched his network. We have Carmeloop TV, high-def service being set up here in Brooklyn. And we've got the Historical Black College Network from BET entrepreneur Curtis Simons that hopes to get on the air in August. Itself a groundbreaking channel, more than just sports. A lot of entertainment and education in that service. Can't predict everything, although I was named as the media prognosticator for the year by USA Today magazine, thanks to their wonderful USA Today, the nation's newspaper, thanks to their contest results were announced yesterday. But one thing I can predict, it's going to be a big roller coaster of a year, and I hope you'll join me for the ride. It promises to be super exciting. Monday on Tomorrow will be televised. We are back in our regular time period. Joining us, Howard Owens, the executive producer of the new Paula Abdul dance competition, Live to Dance, premieres Tuesday night on CBS. Also, Sean Smith, the fourth season of his series, Greek, comes on ABC Family Monday night. We will have the same day exclusive live interview. And Rick Feldman, the president of NAPI, the National Association of TV Program Executives, will be along. He'll get his take on television 2011 before he and his association members pick up in Miami Beach for their annual convention. And 1 week from today, Comcast is getting into a forum for Asian American filmmakers. It's called Cinema Asian America on Demand. Just started. We'll talk to Chi Hen Yang. He's the creator of that service. And Mel Rogers, the president of KOCE, the new PBS major affiliate in Los Angeles, now known as PBS SoCal, will join us for an exclusive interview. That's Friday right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. So be with us Mondays and Fridays, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific. We have a lot of great guests coming your way in the year ahead. We hope to be originating our show live from multiple locations, and we hope to do a lot more, including do on-location work maybe this year at the cable show in Chicago, outside of New York for the very first time. So join us Monday, Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific here on Blog Talk Radio. Remember, all of our episodes from this year, including this one, are available online at www.blogtalkradio.com/SimonApple04. At www.blogtalkradio.com/SimonApple04. And we're available on podcasts. So get out your Microsoft Zoom, your Samsung Gallery, any major mobile device. Check us out on iTunes.com, Zoom.net, and other websites arranged by Sonobite. We're also on TiVo, and you can pick us up through Cable in the Classroom at CICOnline.org. And we want to hear from you. What do you think about our show? What's your idea for future guests and topics? And how about shows you think deserve a break and getting more known on television? Write us at SimonApple04@Yahoo.com. That's SimonApple04@Yahoo.com. And if you have an idea for our regular Show to Know segment, please, when you email, put down where you're from, the name of the show, the network it's on, and a few cents about why you think it should be more promoted. And if we use your question on the air, you get credit. That's SimonApple04@Yahoo.com. SimonApple04@Yahoo.com. Please enclose your name, where you're emailing from, when you email. And as always, we really appreciate what you have to say. The views expressed in this program are those of the participants, not necessarily those of Blog Talk Radio. Podcast distribution provided by Sonobite, words to your ears. For more, surf sonobite.com. And since this is our last show, we have, you might say, an extended credit roll. First and foremost, thank you to everybody at Blog Talk Radio, the Chief Executive Officer and Co-Founder, Alan Levy, Dan Cashman, the President, Bob Charnish, the COO and fellow co-founder, Philip Recchio, the wonderful programming director, Rob Blanken, the operations VP, Megan Berwick, marketing VP, our wonderful production associates, Hillary Long, Matt Vader, and the rest of the Blog Talk Radio crew. Thanks for being so incredible, so supportive, giving us the opportunity and the freedom to do the kind of film we want to do. Thank you to our wonderful fellow Blog Talk Radio producers and hosts. Thank you for your fellowship. Thank you for your support. Thanks for promoting our show on your show. We really appreciate it. And you are the folks that make Blog Talk Radio something very special on the web. It is amazing what you find here and what you can listen to every day on one of the best sites on the web. That's why Blog Talk Radio has more than close to 8 million listeners around the world every month. And believe me, it's going to grow very quickly in 2011. Thank you also to all the guests who have been on our program throughout the year, more than 150. Thank you to all the publicists and press relations people at the broadcast networks, the cable networks, independent syndicators, independent producers, PR agencies like Rogers and Cowan, Rubenstein, MPRM, et cetera, Weber Shandwick, et cetera, et cetera. Can't name everybody, but thank you all for your support and for getting us the guests we get. Thank you to the wonderful people at Sonobite, CEO Bahar Gawadi, our wonderful podcast producer and theme music composer, Philip Salisbury, his associate, Rob Brack, Pat Brill, everybody at Sonobite, thank you for making our podcast so sensational. We are wrapping up this year with more than 185,000 downloads, and we are averaging more than 25,000 a month. You make it happen, and we really, really appreciate it. Thank you to my friends and my family for being incredibly supportive. Thank you to Landmark Education, the Empowerment Education Program offered around the world, and all the Landmark graduates who make something happen every day. I really appreciate your support. This show came out of a Landmark course, and I really, really appreciate it. And finally, thanks to all of you who listen, whether you've done so just today or whether you've listened all year long. We always say this at the end of every show, and I mean it. Thank you for your listening. It's your listening and how generous you are that makes this show possible. I appreciate your email. I appreciate your critiques, all your thoughts on Facebook, on our Tomorrow We Televise group page, wherever. Thank you for taking a listen and for taking an involvement and participating in a program about the world of television. As you've heard, it is an amazing world, and it wouldn't be as amazing if you didn't participate in it. So thank you. Keep listening. Keep downloading. Keep supporting. Spread the word. It's only going to get better from here on in. So one more time in 2010, for Tomorrow Will Be Televised, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for your listening. Please have a fantastic start to your new year and a sensational 2011. Whatever you want to cause this year, I hope you cause it and a whole lot more. And if you're going out this New Year's Eve, please, 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 party hard, party smart, be safe. Use mass transit if you need to. Use car service. Use a designated driver. Whatever you have to do, be as safe as you can. So we'll see you back here and hear you back here Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, here on Blog Talk Radio. Until the next time, next year, stay well and stay tuned.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.